This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Choose the most unusual matches. Choose the best of the WWF. Choose wrestling's biggest, smallest, and strongest. Choose Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Roddy Piper's greatest hits, and wrestling's bloopers, bleeps, and body slams. Choose George the Animal Steel. Choose the Ken Patera story. Choose the life and times of Captain Lou Albano. Choose the Hulkamania series. Choose the Ultimate Warrior. And choose Macho Man Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth. Choose WWF World Tour, Smack and Whack'em, and UK Rampages 91, 92, and 93. Choose a journey back in time. Choose Seeing Your Video. It's time for everyone to dust off the VCR and plug it back into the television set as we take a trip into the Colosseum Home Video Vault with your host, Rory McNamara.
Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 3 of Senior Video, the show where I, Rory McNamara, stick my hand into the damp cardboard box of Colosseum videos, pull one out, and then break it down to within, or very possibly beyond, an inch of its life. Because let's face it, these videotapes are pretty precious things. However, it is impossible to perform such an undertaking alone. So joining me again today is my fellow special relation here on the P2BN Wrestling Network, and that is Mr. Callum McDougall. Callum, how are we today, sir?
I'm very good, Rory. How are you?
Not bad at all, my friend. Not bad at all. You were, of course, here for the inaugural edition of Senior Video 2 months ago. But starting things off, making sure that we didn't fall off at the first hurdle, I chose episode 1, which, of course, was UK Rampage 93. Mr. Ben Locke was here for edition 2, and he chose Smack and Whack'em. So I have afforded you the luxury that all other guests will have going forward, Mr. Callum, choosing your own Colosseum video from the vast selection currently available for $9.99 a month still on the WWE Network Home Video Classics section. Callum, why don't you tell the populace out there what you chose for us to look at this evening?
Well, I scoured high and low on the network to see what I could choose. I've seen some pretty poor Colosseum home videos, but I saw one that I thought would be right up our alley. It looked, ran down the matches, and it looked absolutely fantastic. So tonight I have chosen WWF Rampage 1992.
You have indeed. And to avoid confusion, as I indeed was confused when Callum told me what show we were doing, this is Rampage 92, not UK Rampage 92. I am sure we will get to that one in due course, but glad I clarified that nice and early with Mr. McDougall. Watching two different Colosseum videos, and only now had I discovered that fact, things might have got a bit hairy. But Rampage 92, it very much was, as you can tell when you look at the front cover of the VHS tape on the Place to Be Nation page accompanying this recording. So, Callum, everybody knows the score. Shall we get into it, Rampage 92?
Let's do it.
Yee and indeed ha. Right from the start, on the WWE Network, we are greeted, if that's the right word, by the following dreaded words. Presented in the most complete form possible due to original production technical difficulties. Now, of course, that usually means, dear listener, that somebody on the original broadcast either did a swear or did a sex. Now, on the network, this actually gets a 15 rating. We have a couple of suggestions as to why that might be. But if you do own the original Colosseum videotape and do know what was taken out or replaced for the network version, do get in touch. We will give you information on how to do that at the end of our presentation today. But we do get some boom chicka boom music to kick us off. And again, it is clearly piped in as we can't hear a word of Sean Mooney's actual introduction. And that is a shame. No, really, it is. He's in a fairly accurately portrayed Western town, and before we get properly started, he actually shoots somebody. But it was outside the ring, so it was okay. Two other hoodlums trade worked punches. Ah, that's a bit more like it, as we head into our first match. We will review our Western motif on this video a bit later on. And our first match is the same as the last match in our previous show. It is Undertaker versus the undefeated Razor Ramon. with Gorilla and Alfred on the call. Alfred says that after today, the word undefeated could be used in the past tense, which is sort of true. That's a bit of a 6 out of 10, see me, I think. He also pronounces his name Raza Ramon. I don't think I've ever heard that before, and if not, it is with good reason. So then, Razor versus The Undertaker, the second time for us, although this one, I think, comes a few months before the match we talked about on Smack and Whack'em. Razor begins with a smack on the back and an invitation to bring it, and Taker is only too happy to oblige with those open-hand punches of his. You know the ones, I really, really miss them. Razor with a few kicks, and he actually knocks Taker down. That looked oddly innocuous, and I don't think it was planned, but at least Taker bounced back like rubber. We head outside, and Razor takes a header to the guardrail, and yet another Excedrin headache reference from our commentary team on these shows. Slam by Taker, but he misses an elbow. Closed onto the outside, but of course the dead thing lands on his feet. I should say, to clarify why I've called him the dead thing, they were discussing before the match whether or not Undertaker was a man. Gorilla settled for a thing, so there you go. Undertaker recovers with a neck snap on the top rope. Razor back with more punches, but Taker blocks and sets up for Still at School, but Razor hurls him off the rope. Taker gets up. Good facial from Ramon there. Outside again, and two shots to the steps, but to no avail. Razor instead reaches for a chair and gets in some hard hits for 92. Back in, Ramon tries that side choke slam thing, but Taker blocks. So it's the Wilbur Schneider special by the ropes instead, albeit not for long. UT misses a leg drop and takes two eye rakes. Ah, now it's 1992. Snap mare and chinlock by Razor for the first real lull of the match. Razor is bleeding from his left temple here for some reason, and that's definitely hard way. Taker powers out and gets off that flying clothesline. It's Tombstone City, as called by Gorilla, but we are too close to the ropes. So Razor decides he has had enough and wanders to the back. UT follows him, so he opened, as is going to be very customary with a lot of these Coliseum videos, with a double countout. Callum, Ben and I discussed last month about the possibilities that were rumbling underneath the surface, particularly in 1995, about an Undertaker-Razor Ramon feud that never happened. And that match last month and this one today do make me wish we had got it at some point.
Well, I've actually got that as one of my notes. It was that this match was like typical early 90s Undertaker fare, where it's not going to be fast paced by as it would, as his matches would become as he went through his career. But I've said it would makes you wonder what a Taker Razor match would have been later in the decade, especially if the WrestleMania 11 match had happened, certainly miles ahead of what Taker King Kong Bundy was.
Thanks for the reminder.
I'm always here to help. But yeah, it's a missed opportunity.
What do you think of the match we got here?
I've put slow plodding, but not too bad. I guess, as I said, it's what you'd expect from an Undertaker match in the early 90s. But there was glimpses of what he would transition into be. I thought it was okay. A nice start to the tape anyway.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I thought Undertaker looked perhaps a little more mobile than we used to see him throughout a lot of 92 and possibly into 93, 94 and indeed, oh yes, 95 as well. I think Razor held his own pace on offense quite nicely here. I think he settled into his role a lot better than a lot of revisionist historians would have him down as. I think when a lot of Razor's work in late 92, early 93 is reviewed, it's probably a little more undervalued than he should be. I think he arrived fully formed. All those wonderful vignettes, of course, helped as well. But I think he came into the WWF at just the right time for the nature of baby faces he was going to be facing. I thought he acquitted himself very nicely here. So he paced himself well. His offense was crisp when it needed to be. Showed the good heel mannerisms. Sold well when required. Those chair shots were very, very hard indeed. And he was bringing it there. I don't know how much Mr. Calloway would have appreciated that, but there you go. We were the lucky ones 28 years after the fact. Callum, did you see how or why Razor got cut around the temple?
No, it was I just sort of happened to appear. At first, I never quite noticed it. I thought I was making it up, and then it just sort of you got a good look at it, and there was a big patch of blood just at the top of his head. I'm not quite sure how it happened.
Yeah, sort of like a semi quickly congealed gash around just above his left eye, I think is what you particularly noticed it when he was holding down a headlock with about 2 or 3 minutes to go. But I went back and checked and I could not see where it actually came from. If you are aware of this, dear listener, then do let us know. That would be niche level trivia, wouldn't it? Ah, yes, I'm a writer. I was hardway cut against the Undertaker in his match on the Rampage 92 VHS. That would be wrestling. And they say wrestling fans are geeks, I tell you. More than that shortly. But yeah, a fine match here. I think it was slightly better than one we got on the Smack and Whack'em tape. Double count out, but what you going to do, really? You ain't jobbing any of these two at this point, are you?
No, not at all. It certainly didn't detract from... from the match itself. I've got a couple. I don't know if you picked up in any of the bits from commentary.
Hit me.
So Lord Al, right at the very start, talking about the Undertaker, and he goes, "Oh, look at that face, that visage." I was like, "Wonderful, wonderful, sir." And then Gorilla channeling his inner 2020 JR when Razor's putting on an abdominal stretch, goes, "Well, this isn't going to work. What a waste of time this is." And then he gets to the rope and doesn't, and he goes, told you it was a waste of time. And I was like, well done in building these two up.
Frankie Gorilla makes one or two appearances on this tape.
And did you notice who was the ref as well?
Tell me.
It was Tim White. So I've got meaning that in the ring we have a dead man, a man who killed somebody, albeit accidentally, and a guy who had a weekly WWE.com skit about him trying to kill himself.
Ah, so that explains the 15 writing.
Questionable joke number one.
Why do I feel you put a count at the end of that for some reason, Callum?
I know I've definitely got another. I know I've definitely got another one lined up, but you know,
my finger is on the trigger if required.
The night is still young.
As I rather suspect it will be. But yeah, a good start. I think we can all agree there.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I do wish they'd seen a bit more of Heel Razor a bit later on too, but. They had to turn him face when they did. If you make someone too much of a badass, they're going to get behind you, even in 93. And so it proved. Straight into our next match, and it's Brett versus Sean again. Alfred accompanies... Sorry, do that again, because I've got a bit on Mooney here.
Sorry.
Straight into our next match, and it's Brett versus Sean. Alfred accompanies Mooney on commentary from Ottawa. Here is Mooney. How do you know that Mike McGurk doesn't have eyes for the Hitman? Well, I will attempt to answer that. She didn't make it into his book, although I suppose that doesn't prove very much. Anyway, before the lawyers are listening, intercontinental title contest between Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels from Ottawa, as I say. Oh, Rob's hands with glee. Lock up to start, and Shawn gets off a swish arm drag. Bret up, and some nice arm work is exchanged by both men. Brett rolls out of an armbar but gets hammerlocked, which he then reverses, gets it reversed by him, then outwits Sean by running him right out of the ring. And he allows himself a large smile after that one. Of course he does. Now Brett slaps on what is described as a nicely tucked in manoeuvre as Sherry shrieks. Big clothesline for a sharp two and back to the mat arm work. Sean with a leapfrog but gets caught on a second one and gets hurled into the buckle. Cover for two. Shoulder block, but Sean gets off the desperation knee to turn the tide. Big bump to the corner. They are not phoning this one in. And Sean puts his foot on Brett's throat. Sherry with a customary shot as the ref, who looks terrifyingly like Matt Hancock, is distracted. Jumping knee by Sean for two, and now his turn to slap on a chin lock. Brett up, and the crowd are loud for it, but he goes right back down after an elbow. Hitman with a sharp inside cradle for a close two, and Sean responds by just slugging him back down. HBK really grinds on the chin lock this time. Again, the Ottawa crowd will their hero up, but he ends up in a sleeper. He drives Sean back into the corner, though, but then eats a lovely standing drop kick for two. He waits on the ropes and hits the diving clothesline, does Brett. Inverted atomic drop and then the Sean bump off an Irish whip. Irish whip? Freudian slip, you know the bump. Clothesline to the back of the head gets two as Sherry wails. Backbreaker, second drop oboe. One, two... And no. European uppercut, but Sean steals a backslide. No Brett is on the ropes. Now a roll up by Hitman for two. And then after that very fast exchange, we get a double down for a deserved breather. HBK with a side crescent kick, but that won't get it done. Indeed, Sean doesn't even go for a cover. The teardrop suplex? Oh, now that's a finisher. Brett, though, rolls out of what would have been certain death to steal the two count. A few more roll-ups as Sherry gets on the apron. A whip reversal and Shawn collides with her. Brett then, with a schoolboy, gets tight on the cover and he pins Shawn's shoulders to the mat for the 1, 2, 3. I recommend that he make the most of that one. Callum, I'm going to be biased about this match, but for very good reason.
Oh, absolutely. I've got very few notes on this one because it was one of these, if I was had a pen and paper, it was pen down, notebook to the side and just watch it. It was great. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Leave your cynicism at the door, eh?
Aye, I mean, I've got a bit of a thing for Bret Hart, the person. He's a mark for himself that lives in the kayfabe world. However, you cannot put aside how fantastic he is in the ring, and it just shows you. I can't take that away from him. He's absolutely excellent. And when these two get in, more often than not, it's excellent. Other than a couple of exceptions, Iron Man, Survivor Series, cough cough. But yeah, it's great stuff. Great stuff.
It really was. I think this match is also available as one of the extras on the Shawn versus Brett, or is that Brett versus Shawn? I really should get that one right. Greatest Rivalries DVD set. So I had seen that one before. I think it's the same match. Yeah, it's my notes here are purely play by play. Apart from Matt Hancock as the referee. I should say, for those of you lucky enough to not know, Matt Hancock is the health secretary here in Great Britain. And yeah, that's the only reference he's ever going to get on these shows, I hope.
And being health secretary right about now, for people who are listening in the future, if you look at the date that this goes out, being a health secretary in the UK at this point in time, not exactly a badge of honour.
He will be afforded no sympathy now or no sympathy if I listen back to this show 25 years into the future. I can tell you that. Just imagine what his memoirs are going to be. Anyway, no, if you don't know, you don't know, and you don't want to know, trust me. But this match was really quite glorious, especially for Shawn at this time. I think I mentioned it last month, and I'm sure I've discussed it elsewhere as well, that 92 Shawn, it hadn't quite come together at this point. Although I do think in-ring, his 92 probably better than his 93, to be honest, where he had quite the large size ring around his waist. But that's another story. But he was it sounds a weird thing to say Shawn was hanging with Brett, but I think that's the way the match was actually crafted. Obviously Shawn was the heel, but I did get the sense Brett was leading it. But Shawn was with him every step of the way and showed more than a few hints of why he would become the Shawn Michaels, you know. Just his second rope dropkick here was fantastic. I thought, again, his selling was on point. His mat work, which is often something he gets criticized for, and perhaps fairly. I had no qualms to put on that one here. And Brett was in his imperial phase. Just no point picking out individual parts about this match at all.
If I'd seen this match before, before I put my GWWE list in last year, it might have made it. It was that good. I was thoroughly impressed that it was a match that was this good, just tucked away on a Coliseum home video.
You actually got ourselves a pinball out of it as well.
Well, I thought, and I thought the last few minutes of it was like it started to pick up, and it was the crowd noise at the end, they were going mental, and I don't think it was piped in any way. It was a genuine reaction to what was a great finish.
We have got a suspiciously quiet crowd a little bit later on in a match I really hoped they wouldn't be, but here there was no need for anybody there in the truck to press any buttons. And yes, it was in Ottawa, but
yeah, I mean,
they still got to react.
Exactly.
Not a given, even in Canada.
You've got to give them something to react to. They're not like you're going to get a hometown pop. It's like, oh, he's from Canada. Yeah, here comes Brett. He's like second only to maple syrup and Wayne Gretzky. but like, if you don't give them anything else, then it's just going to be a damp squib at the end. But no, they gave them everything they needed and more.
So I'll take it maple syrup and Wayne Gretzky are tied for number one then, if Brett is number two to them.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. I suppose they would be. I mean, you know, Wayne Gretzky covered in maple syrup.
No,
could be some people's fantasy. We might need to ask some of our friends north of the border. north of the Place to Be Nation border, not like I'm north of the border to you. That could be, like, who knows? There's questionable joke number two.
A bonus one there, right?
Exactly.
You hadn't planned that one. It's the way he
tells. No, it was like that. It was like the lost segue. unplanned, but it's now become a thing.
He's just got a natural flair for this sort of thing, hasn't he?
This is what happens when you don't prepare. And the thing is, I've prepared for this show.
Oh, there's an indictment. But yes, Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels from Ottawa, June 92, I believe is the date on this one. If you check out just one thing from this VHS on the WWE Network, do make it this match. Nothing we can say can really add to it. It's when wrestling is as great as this, you know, a bunch of schmucks watching it 28 years distance, 3,000 miles away, what we say is immaterial. Just do yourselves a favour. You know what I mean by that. Maybe we can have something to discuss about our next segment, though. And why do I feel that questionable joke number three might be lurking? As it is time for Makeup Tips with Sensational Sherry. Opening with a somewhat gratuitous shot of her ample ass, we hear this will be the best thing she has ever got involved with. That should quell a rumour or two. Her guest, who is a very reluctant-looking young woman, is here, and she is our guinea pig for the day. A blonde who complains all the time. There is a funny moment here where Sherry clearly just about stops herself from calling her a little bitch and settles on little bitty thing. After a cut, we see the work that Sherry has done to said bitty thing, who looks like Mick Ronson after David Bowie had a go at him in 1972. Oh, why do I feel I'm going to regret this? Callum, over to you.
Questionable joke number three is not upcoming. I've got two notes here. Sherry is great. Because she is. If you say that, if you find somebody that says Sherry Martel isn't one of the best women ever to be in the sport of professional wrestling, then you have found yourself a liar. And the model obviously doesn't know who Sherry is, because if that woman tells you you're beautiful, then don't argue with her, because she could kick my arse. It was one of these ones. It was stuck in there for a bit of light-hearted comedy. I thought it was quite good.
It was fun. I've got to say, it was probably a little tamer than I was expecting. Not that I was hoping that the 15 certificate would have been worked particularly close to the bone on this one, but it was a bit soft soap, is it fair to say? Not a whole lot really happened on it, I've got to be honest.
No.
Sherry,
I think
just apply some...
You knew what you
stable
were...
Stable 98 you... lunar makeup. To her,
yeah,
as far
you
as
knew what
goes.
You were going to get. You were like, she was going to do her makeup like herself with the like diamante thing stuck to her face and like an eyeshadow that goes up the way all the way up to her forehead, and you knew what you were going to get out of it. But you knew what the punchline was. But it's the bit in between where she's just basically just shouting at her.
Well, that is our gal, isn't it? You know, she is a shouter.
Yeah, well, apparently so.
A shrieker. Now it's my turn to try and drop one in. Okay.
This is where 50 beatings coming from.
Giving as good as I get. Yeah, there's not much to talk about with this segment, rather unfortunately. I thought this would give us a bit of a field day, but it is Sherry applying some bad makeup to a faceless woman. Pun possibly intended. I don't know who that poor WWF employee was. I presume she was a WWF employee. I'd be surprised if she's still there now, whoever she is.
Well, if you know, 1992, is that not when there was a few lawsuits going around?
Indeed.
Probably not.
No.
Allegedly.
We'll keep that one
in, allegedly.
Where if you did sneeze in front of Vince McMahon in 1992, at that point you might have got away with it. I'd like to think even sneezing or maybe even smoking weren't Vince's number one bones of concern and contention at that point. Like to think he was keeping his eyes on other situations.
Well, maybe that's what, that's why he was too busy focusing on the sneeze and the other things went past, like, possibly. I mean, he could have gone, we've got an epidemic of sneezing in the locker room. Can we phone a doctor? Doctor Zahoni, can you come in and help us? We've got a sneezing is going round the thing. I don't like sneezing. Next thing you know, one thing leads to another. And he's hauled in front of a grand jury.
The body was dead when I got there, pal.
Exactly.
Not going to work, is it? Not going to work. Anyway, everybody, judge for yourself. I will play in all of these sensational Sherry makeup tips vignette at the end of this broadcast. And if you were the young woman who had her face destroyed by Sherry, do, on the highly likely event you are listening to this show, do get in touch. We now have a 40-man battle royal, which the blurb on the network helpfully tells us was recorded on June the 1st, 1992. Okie dokie then, Callum. I did not look this up. I went purely on the camera shots and the Fink's announcements, although the commentator did talk over it. I'm going to go through who I think is everybody in here. By all means, correct me. Here we go. In the order they were announced, we have got Money Inc., Virgil, Barry Horowitz, nice trunks, somebody called Rick Johnson and Al Hunter, Bob Knight, British Bulldog, Place to Be Nation buddy Glenn Ruth, the Beverly Brothers, Jim Powers, Dwayne Gill, Repo Man, Knobs and Sags, Slaughter, two doughy jobbers who I could not even bring myself to try to identify, the Dublin Destroyer, Kerry Von Erich, some bloke who looks a bit like David Gower, Tony Ulysses, Bob Bradley, High Energy, Bret Hart, nope, me neither, Kato, Bruce Mitchell, Jim Brunzel, Skinner, the Dark Destroyer, Rick Martel, El Matador, and the all-too-unmistakable character that is Tatanka. Callum, how did I do?
A good spot on David Gower. I mean, you know, from Lords to a 40-man battle royal. could you get any different? I've got a note here. It's a who's who mixed with a few plain who's with a lot of porn stashes. Although when I heard Glenn Ruth, I was like, surely not. Rewind and going, oh, fuck, it is.
That's the boy.
There's Headbanger Thrasher.
He was on the job squad, the original job squad, well into 1993 in that role.
Oh, yeah, he was in some of the early...
He's a fair few early roles, yeah.
Yeah.
This must have been very close to his first appearance, I reckon.
Oh, I imagine so. But, looking fantastic. Resplendent in his early 90s neon gear and the mix, because we can come to it after, but he lasts quite a long time.
He does. One of the few people you could actually notice who did last a long time, because I normally pride myself on the quality of my pay-per-view writings for this, and indeed they are very in-depth, as I'm sure you know. However, you're not getting them out of me for this one. So I'm going to be calling on you very soon, Callum, I'm afraid. Okay. So if you want to take a drink, take one very quickly. Skinner and Martel are the first two out. I could tell you all that. Alfred drops an oh drat when Repo is eliminated. As will be confirmed a bit later on, Repo is kind of Alfred's guy on this videotape. We get straight to our final four, and they are Brett, of course, Bulldog and the Beverleys. Brett and Blake scrap by the ropes, and as Bulldog gets whipped into them, the Hitman topples over the top rope. Well, that was worth it. The heel team then think they have made light work of Davey Boy and celebrate early after throwing him, but only onto the apron. And Davey actually wins by press slamming Blake over. Why don't more people do that in battle royals anyway, I ask? Bulldog really is a bright lad. I want to say more on this one, Callum, than just a battle royal, but just a battle royal.
It was just a battle royal. Yeah, there's not much to say, but this is, I think, other than maybe one match later on, this I've got the most notes on. No, this is the match with the most notes that I've got on. So take from that what you will. Most of it is around the questionable booking of it. I felt like I've got a note that says there's a reason why most of these are just 20 man battle royals, because you can't see everybody and they can't move. So it just seems like it was just sort of a 40 man for to think to say you're about to witness WWF history. Wardell with, you know, we love a niche reference such as David Gower or Kevin Pressman, but he's like, it's like Piccadilly Circus on New Year's Eve. I mean, that's niche even for us, I think.
Even we wouldn't.
No.
No, we wouldn't. Would we? No. Maybe we will now, but...
Well, we could now, yeah. Every time we see a battle royal, oh, it's like Piccadilly Circus on New Year's Eve.
If we ever do end up doing a World War III or something, we can drop that one in.
Oh, now there is an idea, Rory. And when's the anniversary of the Special Relations? November. Well done.
What have I done? go through your prepared notes again fast.
So there was an overhead camera shot where it was like a prototype of the ladder match where it's just looking down from an angle. That was pretty cool. At that point you could see everybody, but it only lasted for about 3 seconds. Lordal, another zinger. They've been eliminated so quickly that I don't recognise who's actually being eliminated. It's like, no, Al, you just don't recognise them because you don't know who they are. Question why loads of big guys are getting eliminated, but they leave guys like Glenn Ruth and Dwayne Gillen. Like, the two of them lasted longer than Owen Hart. Which, again, screams back to the 1995 Royal Rumble, back to 1995. Just make it 20 and have your big guys in with some. Like, if you want to have Glenn Ruth and Dwayne Gillen and your Battle Royal to give them some shine for whatever reason, then go for it. I also felt that there was one person in the match who had an unfair advantage. Do you hazard a guess who I feel had an unfair advantage?
Hit me.
Kerry Von Erich. Because how can he have two feet hit the...
No. Questionable joke. I've lost count already.
And obviously, once it came down to the Beverleys and the Bulldog, there was only one person that was going to win. You know, the Bulldog was always going to win because he's bizarre. And obviously had to squeeze that one in. Although I was very impressed that he managed to get the big guy up for a press slam. That was quite good. Also, not surprising if they can do that, why he's not there for very much longer.
Are you saying he was aided?
Yeah, I mean, you could clearly see. I mean, it was a clear aid there. I mean, it Bo or Blake, whatever one it was, you could clearly see him jump. I mean, he aided himself up to there. Nothing else, obviously, allegedly.
I think it was just Bulldog's own built-in strength, was it?
Well, of course. I mean, yeah, natural.
I mean, we already know he's got the brains. That will be confirmed again in a couple of minutes. But he has the brawn. Yeah.
Oh, of course.
This stuff can't be taught. You can't bottle it, you know.
You can't. No, you can't. It's there. You cannot. It's like so natural. You can't squeeze any more in. And I also questioned who had the worst haircut: Bulldog's braids or the girl in the front row, who they immediately cut to, and her mullet. I'm 92. Still seeing Bulldog's braids.
Really? 92, baby. This is where the mullet was still pretty much a thing in 92, wasn't it, right? 92, James Hetfield still had one. Chris Waddle still very much had one. Another reference everybody else will be looking up right now.
I think James Hetfield and Chris Waddle would still have one today if they had the ability to go here.
I don't think you could even make the front of a mullet out of their hair if you put them together now, to be honest.
No.
Business in the front is closed. Anything else to say on this? Just the Battle Royal game.
No. I'm even surprised at myself how I managed to get so many notes out of it.
You've done astoundingly well to get 3-4 minutes of discussion out of this. Nothing I can add to it, ladies and gentlemen. It's a Battle Royal that the Bulldog won. That's your lot, really. I'm disappointing myself that I couldn't come up with anything else to say about this. I do have a long-standing disdain for battle royals in general. I think they're overused. I think they do have their place, but they're far too common. They're an easy booking trope. And let's be honest, unless there's a major feud going on, they don't get even remotely interesting until the final six. And even that is probably being a bit generous. But it was won by the Bulldog, and that is not the last we saw or heard of him on this tape, because it is time for his Coliseum video trivia question. Yes, Callum, trivia questions. When I asked you earlier why you chose this video, I knew the answer. And because when it comes to trivia quizzes, Mr. McDougall, there might be official statistics out there that show you are a better man than I. Are there not?
It's all due to circumstance, you know. Some of us prepared, some of us woke up 5 minutes beforehand. You know, straight up, who knows?
Some of us got the first round questions, you got that I knew the first eight of. But anyway, I'm not bitter, everybody. You know this if you hear me on the special relations or on here. I don't hold grudges. I don't
not
bring
at all.
Things back up again.
No, not at all.
Davey Boy has the IC belt with him here, just to date this one. And he asks a question. When I first entered the WWF, I was part of a tag team. Who was my partner and what was our name? He'll be doggone if you don't get it. We all do know the answer to that one. I won't insult anybody's intelligence by asking it. Although, if I had been asked it when I was on Body Press Your Luck 2 minutes after I had woken up, who knows, I might well have embarrassed myself still further. More Coliseum video trivia a little later on. So, Tatanka versus Rick Martel. Just once again, date this in 1992. Rick Martel, we are told, is a very famous name in Europe. Tatanka wants himself some straight off the bell, but Martel bails and then catches him on the way back in. Rick eats buckle and some sharp clothesline send him scurrying back outside, and Tatanka is on the warpath. Yes, I wrote that. Tackle, and the model is back outside again. Choke by the apron, but he gets sent arm first into the post. Tomahawk chop by the aisle, and then back into the ring we go. Blatant chokehold, come on ref, get a grip by Martel. I miss Vince on commentary, but he misses a charge in the corner. Armbringer by Tatanka, and I think as far as his moveset is concerned, the quiver is now empty. Nice side suplex by the model and a gut wrench too. Backbreaker by the model, but he eats knees on a springboard splash. And then he gets caught off an axe handle, and here comes the comeback. Tatanka hits the tomahawk, but gets trapped in a stun gun. He pauses to celebrate and jaws with the ref, and Tatanka rolls him up for the victory. Callum, when I heard that there was going to be a WrestleMania 8 rematch on this tape, you can guess the rest.
You were delighted to hear it was this one.
Put him up, indeed.
There wasn't much to this one, really, that I've got. Basic, but certainly a lot better than some of the stuff we saw in UK Rampage.
Yes.
93. I'm looking at you, Typhoon versus Brooklyn Brawler. Not much to it. I did catch Lord Al praising the British Bulldog, saying he did very well in the trivia contest, and I'd like to think he would be. I can't imagine he was that fluked that he couldn't remember a question about himself. it is what it is. It was inoffensive.
It was inoffensive. In as much as a Tatanka match can be in any way inoffensive without.
Yeah, poor choice of words there. the action was inoffensive.
Nicely clarified, Buffalo. Yeah, Tatanka never developed in the way he could have done. For me, he was always that guy on page 28 of the WWF annuals. And then there was Tatanka, you know, that kind of thing. Even as a nipper going back and watching a little bit of this stuff, I never had any affinity with him whatsoever. Pretty boring worker, as has been discussed on various Place to Be Nation shows in the past. Didn't change one iota after that awful heel turn in 94. But at least he came back in 2006. So there you go. They've got that to look forward to on the North-South Connection show. Martel, here's a question for you, Callum. So as WWF fanboys, as we have to call ourselves, we're most used to heel Rick Martel, the model, teaming up with a slickster, etc., etc. I don't know how much of it you've seen, but I always prefer Martel as a face in the ring. What do you think?
I've only seen bits and pieces from when he was with Tito from the old classics that used to get on Sky Sports.
Yes.
He was excellent. He was excellent there. He's obviously sort of, he's highly regarded from his time even before the title run and in the AWA. So he can handle himself. Maybe in ring he was better as a face, but you can't pass up the model as a character.
Absolutely not. When this is somebody who can no show events because he's needed at a fashion show in Paris.
Wonderful. if you could merge the two, then it would be great. But they're sort of oil and water. They're not exactly the most compatible. The plucky babyface in ring style with no. I'm a model and you're not.
You just accept it, don't you? And of course, there was Martel's at the time inexplicable but possibly fairly deserved mega push he received in WCW in 1998.
Yeah, he seemed like
TV title.
He was on a roll. He was on a roll there, and then, you know, one wrong landing. That's what, yes, it was, wasn't it?
Oh, did he not
hit the ropes and his knee just completely exploded.
Against Booker, that was, yeah.
Yeah.
At just Super Brawl, I think.
I think so. Because was he not meant to win? And yes, at that point, he just couldn't. And he obviously had a wee bit of fire left in him, and he was going great guns, and then just one freak accident, and that's it.
And he came back, and in his comeback match against Stevie Ray, he got injured there as well. The Harlem Heat curse, I'm afraid, everybody. Of course, Rick Martel, during that run, went over Eddie Guerrero clean as a sheet in 3 minutes with a spine buster. In as much as it could in January 1998, the internet lit up after that one.
But seeing how Martel went on in that run, could you imagine if, like, I know Eddie wasn't in the best of shape mentally, but that could have been give them more than 3 minutes, that could have been a pretty decent, if that was on Saturday and it's Saturday night and they got like 8 or 9, that could have been a banger.
That's, you've really got me thinking. Now we're going down the rabbit hole. This is why we need more of this stuff on the network. I do wonder what hidden gems, to coin the only phrase I could think of in 2 seconds, we could actually find on editions of Saturday Night and Pro that are out there. No, random pairings that you wouldn't normally think of going out there and hitting 4 stars regularly.
Well, I'm thinking, I could be wrong here. I definitely know the final was of the, when they brought back the Cruiserweight title in 96. I know the final was on Pro. I don't know if the whole tournament was on that, but was there not a time where they just let Jimmy Hart book the weekend shows and it had its own matches and storylines away from everything else, and it was meant to be quite good, and you would have guys like Eddie and Rick Martel just doing their own thing, because they had a hell of a roster at the time.
They bloody did. Quality and quantity. I think they had about 150 people on their roster, like 98-99.
I think so, aye. And people are surprised when it started losing money.
Including somebody who was being paid $150,000 a year despite not once appearing in the ring. We will get to him in his previous guise in just a couple of minutes' time. After Ric Flair's... you got it. After Ric Flair's trivia question, how did I become WWF champion for the first time? It shouldn't take an hour to figure it out. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. I must say, I do appreciate him saying that he outlasted 28 superstars to win it, because he was number 3 and DiBiase had already gone out, you see?
Oh, the guy's a genius. Attention to detail like no other.
Because it pisses me off when anybody says they eliminated 29 other guys to win the Royal Rumble in insert year here, because they didn't, if they get it exactly right. Well, he didn't eliminate all 28, but he knows he could only have eliminated... You get it. I'm labouring the point.
Drew McIntyre, I believe you'll find, eliminated 29 guys. I felt like it. I was there for every single one.
As soon as I say the words labouring the point, there you are to bring up Drew McIntyre.
As soon as you say the words Royal Rumble, you know I'm going to bring up Drew McIntyre.
All I've got to do is say a word and there you are with it, Carl. Oh, Pavlov would have a field day with you, I tell you. Let's get to our next match, shall we? And it is the genius, the Lanny Poffo I referred to earlier, teaming up with the Brothers Beverly to take on the team of Legion of Doom and Paul Ellering. There's a sign in the crowd that reads the Beverly Sisters, and it really has just occurred to me after all these years that somebody could call them the Beverly Sisters is the whole reason for the gimmick. Oh, I catch on fast. Ellering starts, and it is safe to say he is slightly more soberly dressed than the man he ties up with, the genius. do adjust your set, everybody. Backslide by Ellering early on and a neckbreaker too. Not bad. He scurries out to tag in Blakeman. Ellering brings in Animal. The Bevs want a timeout despite nothing having happened so far. Hawk gets tied in and he teases a handshake. He spits, I think, at Bo, and we are outside the ring again. After another long break, Bo gets head planted into the mat and Hawk has a chop for Blake for good measure and more bloody stalling. Blake tries to drop Hawk's neck onto the ropes. You know how that one goes. Sadly, there's no Jim Ross here to tell me about his neck muscles. He does miss a charge to the corner, though. He even sort of-ish kind of sells the impact, too. See also a shot with Genius's slate. That's not a euphemism. Blake misses a flying shoulder tackle and Hawk gets the tag to Animal. He sorts out the Bevs in the standard manner but can't get a three count. Double DDT by Animal. Okay, that was nice. And a power slam to Bo. Hawk then gets catapulted onto the top rope, and that's enough for the pin. Okay. We have to wait a few seconds to see the Doomsday device, which of course is taken by the Genius. Well, Callum, that existed. Barely.
Yeah, when I saw this one, I had high hopes for this one. I thought we were going to get a lot of LOD and the Bevels just knocking seven shades of you-know-what at each other, but it never quite happened, unfortunately. The first thing that I've got is, what the hell was the Genius wearing? And then Sean Mooney said it almost right after me. So me and Sean have obviously the same wavelength. And I thought Paul Ellering, for somebody who wrestles once in a blue moon, I mean, who knows when his last match would have been before this, but he kept himself in pretty good shape.
He was in pretty decent nick, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was, although I was really disappointed. I love it when like Ahmed Johnson and Dusty Rhodes, when they would come out with the face paint on. I do like it when random guys, if they're teaming with the Road Warriors, try and dress up like the Road Warriors. I'm disappointed that Paul Ellering, of all people, would know how these guys dress.
Probably did dress them as well. A lot of managerial roles he undertook for them.
Yeah.
So dressing might well have been part of them, especially.
So the story goes. I did like it. I mean, it was okay. It was decent enough without ever being great. Got a wee note here as well. You know, going back to the chat we had with Sean on the last Special Relations, Animal was my go-to guy in Legends of WrestleMania 2. The power slam finisher, easy to do. You whip them in, wee flick of the right stick, boom, over he goes. Good night, Irene. 1, 2, 3 every single time. It was excellent.
I bet you did the thumbs up thing when you actually hit the power slam as well, didn't you? Dropped your controller just a brief second to do that for. I can see you doing
it. Of course,
it,
yeah. One finger and going, yeah. I'm doing it just now.
Oh, of course you are.
And one other note I had was, I'm officially calling this the Lockdown Haircut 6-Man Tag Team Match. Don't know about you, Rory, but I'm currently rocking a Genius at the minute.
Yeah, I've actually, just as I've turned to the mirror, and I wish I hadn't. It's been a while since I last had my Barnet snipped.
Aye, and it's up here anyway, it's going to be a while, yeah. I think we're looking at least another 6 weeks.
It's an accidental 96 sting, my hair at the moment, I would say. And if I carry it like this, the 97 sting won't be too far off. Complete with lack of tan, needless to say.
Oh, well, you're not going over then, brother.
I'm just not taking it seriously enough.
No, allegedly.
I thought this match was fucking shite, actually. I think you've been very kind to it. I thought it might well have been... If UK Rampage 93 didn't exist, chance would be a fine thing. This might well have been the worst match we've seen so far. I appreciate my LOD anti-bias might be doing the talking there for me. I am not a Legion of Doom fan by any stretch of the imagination. I know there are people who were previously supporters of this program who have now probably hauled down their listening devices in disgust. I can think of one person in particular, but I cannot be dealing with the LOD in any of their forms. I can't have it. Is it their work? Is it what we now know about them, Hawk specifically? It's almost hard for me to get a handle on. I know that I should, but I just can't. Like I was rooting for Ellering to do most of the work in this match and tell you everything. The Beverleys were just the gimmick, as I've already finally cottoned onto after nearly 20 years. And I do still have a soft spot, if that is the right expression, for Lanny Poffo. slash the genius. But why he was done up like a Belisha beacon in this match, you will have to ask him.
He looked like a Batman villain.
Do you think that's what he was going for? He had to be going for something, I hope.
Do you know what? Lanny Poffo can think and do things that mere mortals can only dream of, so Christ knows what he was thinking with this.
At least Al didn't drop supple during this. I think
sorry,
long since I've become common knowledge at that point, what do you mean?
Oh dear, I've gone.
He's gone. He's gone. McDougal down. Time to round out this part of the segment by saying, yeah, awful match here, too much stalling, the in-ring was nothing, and a really horrible waste of time, or even though we have managed to get Callum to corpse, so maybe it wasn't after all. Who said this was a fool's errand? Right, Brett's trivia question. Who did he beat for the IC title first time around, and why was it extra special? We get the answer, and just fucking Brett, going back to what you said earlier, Callum. He tells us that he won with his great move, the sharpshooter. Fucking hell, man. You just can't help yourself, can you?
But that's his problem. He just that's exactly it. He just can't help himself.
Why did he have to call it a great move? Why? I want my great move, the sharp. Just call it the sharpshooter, Brett. You don't. Oh, my God. He really does make it difficult. At the best of times, doesn't he?
Because you're like, you see what he does when the bell rings and you're like, I really want to like you, but I'm now separating Brett the man and Brett the wrestler, because Brett isn't a character, that is Bret Hart. He's talking Brett, there.
Sharpshooter.
so you put aside the the wrestler, and just ignore this. I answered all these questions, and I'm like, the correct answer is because his mum and dad were there. But what he really wanted to say was it was Vince Jr., Vince Sr., Jess McMahon, Toots Mon, Bruno Sammartino, Buddy Rogers, Lou Thesz, George Hackenschmidt, and Frank Gotch collectively giving Brett their blessing to be IC champion, and it was a huge sign of respect.
With tears in their eyes.
Yeah.
Brett Sergeant Hart. To Landover, Maryland we go for El Matador and Virgil versus Money Inc. 2 points to note here. One, Gorilla is back on headset, and two, I think this is actually taken from a primetime wrestling taping rather than recorded especially for Coliseum Video. Do write in and tell me if I'm wrong or right on that.
You are absolutely correct, because they mentioned it on the commentary.
Oh wow,
that they said, oh, what a match to open up primetime wrestling tonight.
So off we go. IRS takes the mic, and guess what he says? He and Tito then kick us off. Alfred thinks Irwin is a good name, or at least it was good enough for Eisenhower. Surely he means Dwight, as Gorilla then corrects him. What was Alfred on about there? Stupid limey. Tito sees off IRS early with that Latin temper, Jess. He comes back and gets locked in an armbar. Virgil in, as is DiBiase, and it looks like we're doing this again. Backdrop and a beauty by Virgil and an atomic drop too. Ted gets caught between the two faces who both punch him. Always got a bit of a liking for that one. Tito in, but he takes a cheap knee by IRS. Amber heels assume control. Frequent tags by the champs, but Tito gets two off a nice sunset move. That'll be a sunset flip then. Dwight is in again, and he does what he usually does, and that is bore for his country. Ted tags in and gets some leverage assistance on a reverse chin lock. Virgil takes the bait. Santana does as usual tonight to come back, but gets cut off before he can tag back out. He does, though, block a pile driver attempt with a backbreaker. Wrong again, Gorilla. And executes a lovely neckbreaker. And now he makes the hot tag. All four men end up in the ring quickly, and a double dropkick sends the heels outside. The ref tries to put out Tito as Virgil attempts to suplex IRS back in, but DiBiase is able to hold his leg as he falls, and that seems somewhat familiar. Callum.
I didn't think it was it. Again, this was inoffensive action. I'll say, considering that Tito was in his El Matador gimmick just now. It was the best parts were obviously when Tito was in for his team. You know what you're going to get with him, even in 92, 93, still solid as a rock. There's not much. I've not get much to say about. Not get much to say about the match itself. It was there. It was decent enough. Obviously, the start, you pointed it out. The IRS going through his old shtick. Like, what you need is a good old fashioned audit. Not exactly the New Age Outlaws. Doesn't really get the juices flowing. I'm glad you brought up the Irwin and Eisenhower. Because Gorilla just lets him go. I think Gorilla doesn't quite understand what he's talking about. And he's like, oh, he was a great president. And like, yeah, so was Dwight Eisenhower. Who are you talking about? And he goes, oh, yeah, that's right. I was like, just completely rambling like a madman.
Alfred did just screw up there, right? Now, we haven't missed something here. We're not talking some idiot savant comment. He just cocked it up.
I think so, because the way that Gorilla was talking, the way that Gorilla was saying it goes, are you talking about Dwight? His name was Dwight. He goes, oh yeah, so it was. Like, so I don't know whether he thought he was onto something. He obviously thought that this was a fairly like regal name that could be used for a president. Clung on to Eisenhower and thought, I'm going to run with this without actually, you know, thinking about it. You know, classic Al. And then he's obviously going, oh, the referee didn't see the tag, so he can't allow it when Virgil tried to come in. It didn't stop him earlier when Virgil came in without a tag, and it certainly, Errol Hebner wouldn't stop him making a call that he didn't see in about 5 years' time.
Just all roads and signs point Survivor Series 97, it's a perma presence, isn't it? It's unavoidable.
I'm starting to think that Vince and Sean are innocent here, because the seeds have been sown early doors that Errol Hebner is on the take.
So you think a throwaway primetime wrestling match between Al Matador and Virgil and Money Inc., is that really where it began?
I would say so. It began there and it ended with him selling bootleg t-shirts in the back of his car.
It definitely ended there.
We should have known. The guy's a shyster. The IRS isn't the only shyster in the match.
So the prologue was the main event in February 88. This is the real chapter one. Landover there at the mid-92.
I mean, we're finding stuff from these Coliseum home videos, Rory, that like might have flown under the radar. I think if we put this to Brett, considering it was in a kayfabe world, he would probably go for it. We can tie it all back in. I think we're onto something here.
I just can't get over his great move, the sharpshooter. After we've heard about that, maybe he'll listen to us. Just nod yes, Brett.
We should send them the show.
Keeping in the Brett Hart to the person comments?
I'll keep it all in. It won't like me anyway, because I've been more than vocal about him, especially in previous special relations and pro and obviously this one.
Thick-skinned.
Aye, historically thick-skinned. But we could just play good cop, bad cop.
We could do. I'd just be fawning all over him anyway.
You would be. And I'll just say, well, Sean's better.
that's all you need. That's red rag to a bull.
Exactly.
Wind him up and watch him go. Anyway, there'll be plenty more opportunities to talk about Brett on the Coliseum videos going forward and on the special relations, no doubt. This match was, I thought it was quite nifty, actually. Again, I'm not expecting the earth with these top of matches, but if you can just give me 7 to 8 minutes with no real resting and all action, I'm going to be satisfied. And that's what we got here. I don't recall in this one any real massive slowdown apart from one IRS chin lock, but you're not going to get a complete revolution in this match, are you? You've got to chalk off at least one. If you take that into consideration, your enjoyment is going to be heightened just a little bit. And the finish, you know, 3.5 years after WrestleMania 5, you know, statute of limitations, we can let it go, can't we?
For a match like this, yeah, I would say so.
It's a good finish anyway. I liked it then and I like it now. It's a finish I can get behind in kayfabe. I can believe you wouldn't be able to kick out of that move if somebody was holding down your ankles. I can buy it.
Yeah, because you always see them, like they always use their, well, a lot of, you'll see a lot of the time that they always use their legs to sort of propel them to kick out. So if you've got one of your legs, especially if they play it in there, it's your good, your, so you're obviously left or right footed most of the time.
Yes.
If it's your strongest side, then yeah, you can absolutely see it's a reason why. Logic behind it. It's not difficult. Just put a bit of logic behind it and you're fine. As we've said before, it's not rocket science.
Put a bit of thought behind pro wrestling.
Who'd have thought it? So to speak.
Would we be so lucky? A bit more trivia. It's the boss man now. What was his extra satisfaction in dealing with the Mountie at SummerSlam 91? He, of course, did hard time. And we got the first appearance on these programs of the Macho Man Randy Savage. And here he is defending his WWF title against Repo Man. Of course he is. Repo takes the belt right away, but Savage doesn't let him do it. He gets flung over the top rope by Repo, though, and chucked into the guardrail and the steps and gets a few fists to the temple. There's the clothesline by Macho and a body press off the second rope, which I want to say is a rare move for him. Cheap shot by Repo and yet another chin lock. Occupational hazard with this project, the chin lock, I know. Savage up quickly, but he takes a knee to the stomach and gets tied up in the ropes. He removes a turnbuckle pad and uses the time while the ref tries to repair it to clobber Savage with the hook. Alfred likes that one. Cover attempt, but Savage gets his foot on the rope. Side suplex for two and now a long rear chin lock. But Savage fights out, but misses the axe handle. Feet up on a charge and he hits it at the second attempt. Repo gets his foot on the rope and tries the hook again, but this time the ref sees it. He doesn't see Savage use it himself, though, and after a comedy bump, he is finally in prime position for the elbow, and there we go. Callum, this was the match I was referring to a bit earlier when I said the crowd were not into it, and that's Randy Savage as WWF champion against Repo Man, granted, but still.
Yeah, I was surprised at how sort of quiet they were, because I really enjoyed this one. I didn't think I would when I saw it sort of on the match listing, but I was pleasantly surprised at how good this match was. It wasn't a barnstormer of a match, but Savage made Repo Man look like a genuine threat and a killer. There was some clever bits in it. Also, obviously, the Repo Man is trying to use the hook, so the ref tries to take the hook that's in his hand off, but obviously, because it's like a 10-foot long rope, the ref takes one hook, Savage has got the other one. I thought that was really, that was quite clever. I quite enjoyed this one.
This was probably, where are we now, summer of 92. This was the beginnings of what we would soon come to know as the Randy Savage match, certainly for his first couple of years in WCW that were to come. And I can sum them up thus: get your ass kicked for 10 minutes, pop up, hit your finisher and win. This was the template right here before our very eyes. Repo got everything in this one, apart from that out of character body press off the second rope by Savage until the ending. And you know what? I thought Repo's offense was solid enough here. And Barry Darsow, his work is not the first thing you think about when you discuss him, but it was reasonable enough, not to the point where I ever would have thought that he was going to take the WWF belt. Yes, that's the best I can do, and I watched his show 2 days ago. But even so, the crowd reaction, though, was disappointing, wasn't it? I feel we don't really talk about Savage's second WWF title reign very often, and perhaps maybe it's justifiable that we don't. We all talk about how he won it at WrestleMania 8. We all talk about the pretty darn good rematch with the Warrior at SummerSlam 92. And we talk about how he lost it a couple of days later. I want to say there's not much to discuss between April and August. Obviously, there's no Raw at this time, but I don't know how often he appeared on primetime with the belt or Superstars or anything like that. Maybe he wasn't on screen very often. People who were watching week to week at this period will know better than I did. And if you do, by all means, let us know. How was Savage treated during his second reign as a champion? I'd be very interested to hear about that, because the crowd won. Even the finish didn't get the customary elbow pop. Even at WrestleMania 4, when he hit it in the final match, the crowd finally got off their feet. But it didn't happen here, and that was a shame. But it was good to see Savage on these shows at last. Definitely won't be the last time.
It shows you that they would, as you say, like I've not seen a great deal of 1992 WWF. It does make you see that a guy like Randy Savage, if King of the Ring had come in a year earlier and he had another pay-per-view in between WrestleMania and SummerSlam, you can see why they thought they needed it, because obviously Mania, start of April, end of March to the middle of August, it's a long time to have nothing in between. So it's like he wins it, as you say, he wins it and then nothing, and then he loses it. Other than Warrior, and has he not got a match somewhere with, so not a match in a Coliseum where he defends it against Sean, which is meant to be reasonably good.
But I'm sure I will come across that at some point.
Aye, but other than that, you're not going to find many defences, I don't think, on these shows. I could be wrong, of his second run, which is a shame.
I'm really interested in this now. I want anybody who has been watching week two, or maybe caught up on some more of the superstars that are now on the network, 92, 93, let us know. What was Savage's second reign? What was it like? Because judging by the crowd reaction here, it wasn't one that was particularly liked. And it's not easy for me to say that because, like everybody should, I love the man. Home stretch. And now I'm going to tell you about some of the other vignettes we have seen between the matches on this show. Sean Mooney doing Western stuff. Earlier on, he was asking for a Pepsi, and that was unbleeped, by the way. And you remember right at the very start, you said he shot somebody. Well, the man who had his brother shot dead by him fancied a bit of revenge and got up a shot with Bam appearing on the screen in true Batman 1960s fashion. A couple of good old barroom brawls. We had Sheriff Mooney escaping. We had him being sacked as sheriff, but we finish up here with a vignette by the name of Stuntmen. Oh, and you say they kept kayfabe in 1992. He gets shot a few times and then falls all the way down to the ground, but right on a very helpfully placed bouncy mat. We see it all happen. I've got in my notes, what is this? Triple H Undertaker from WrestleMania 17.
The forgotten Triple H Undertaker WrestleMania match.
Some might say with good reason, but I quite like it. Callum, the Western motif. I want to say that somebody, and I think we all know who, wanted to do this as the gimmick for the videotape, but didn't put a whole lot of point or thought behind it. So it didn't really hold. I would wager that even the Bushwhackers putting up the house in Smack 'em Whack 'em had a little bit more oomph behind it than this one did.
Quite possibly. It was what are you going to find on a Wild West? You're going to find guys shooting each other. But you would probably be able to put that down into one. I did like Sean Mooney channeling his inner Jeff Hardy with a swanton bomb off the top of the saloon.
Yes.
I thought it's years ahead of his time was Mr. Mooney there. And the one thing I thought this might have been, these are the reasons why you get the inauspicious start of what it says it's presenting its most complete form, because at least twice in my notes I've got, can you turn the music down? So I think it's obviously the production error there, either from the original, I hope it's not the original, or they've had to take some music and pipe some music in very poorly.
I want to say it was the latter. I haven't seen the original VHS. If you have and you know what the music was here, do let us know. I've noticed already through the course of this project, especially for the intros to the tapes, you can barely hear what's being said, and some very loud music is being piped in, obviously to drown out the original music, which they're probably sourcing straight from the original videotape. So they can't do it as seamlessly as they can with a lot of the dub-ins for stuff a bit later on in a match context, where I would presume it's going through a lot more sound channels. Pretending I know what I'm talking about. So, but one thing we can say, the music they used was very loud and we couldn't hear a lot of the talking.
They didn't outstay their welcome though, so it is what it is. They were never too long. Yeah, we're never too long.
They were all matches. Yeah, they were only about 20, 25 seconds. And yeah. Mooney was a good sport with them anyway. I need to get used to these sort of things. Tons of these to come. It's not Bobby Heenan playing golf though, is it?
Not quite. Not quite.
I'm just going to have to cheat and get to that one and pretend somebody picked it.
It's not the type of sketch you would get from an early Saturday night's main event, like the Halloween episode, or when they went to the beach and it was all the poolside stuff. It's not on the level of greatness as that, but Sean Mooney's a good sport. You ask him to do anything, he'll do it.
And his career rehabilitation is now very much complete.
Absolutely.
Podcast, presenting the unreleased DVD, you name it.
And he's back in the NWA as well.
Yes.
He's doing the NWA Event Centre. Unfortunately, not doing events at the minute, but that's another story for another excellent podcast.
Oh, you know what side your bread's buttered, don't you? Let's get to our final match of the day. And it's full circle with The Undertaker again. We're back in for the first time in Cornwall, Ontario. He's teaming up with The Warrior, interestingly, against the fellow motley combination of Berserker and Papa Shango. We are right in the heart of 1992, are we not? The faces stare each other down to start, which is rather interesting. Invoking the ancestors, says Alfred. Nope, me neither. Our face team dispose of the baddies very easily indeed, with clotheslines over the top. We reset with Berserker in with Taker. Okay, now I have seen too much of those open hand punches. Nostalgia ain't what it used to be. Clothesline by Berserker, but you know how that one ends. He gets sent into the steps. Warrior in and the gods are with him. Big slam and the clothesline's in the corner, but he gets slugged in the back by Shango, who then comes in and takes advantage. Berserker tags and he headbutts Warrior in the crotch repeatedly. That won't make anything work. Indeed, he then bangs the heels' heads together. Berserker catches him on the way down, though, and he is trapped in the heel corner again. Warrior tries to kick his way out of it, but gets sent down by a Shango clothesline. Warrior tied up in the ropes, but no sign of repose hook here, so he recovers and backdrops Berserker out. And now he gets the tag. Google by Under... Google? 1992, I said. Goozle by Undertaker to Berserker. Flying clothesline to Shango. Double choke to both. Double clothesline by Warrior. Shoulder tackle and a splash. And that is a three count. We get the dead person handshake, and we are done, as the tape ends rather quickly. Callum, sum up our summing up match here.
I thought it was quite good. I didn't think it was... I thought it was two strange but well put together teams, if that makes sense. Like the Super Team and the Taker and Ultimate Warrior shouldn't work, but I thought it did. Strange to see the Ultimate Warrior playing the sort of the babyface in peril role, but when you're teaming with the Undertaker, you've kind of... The other guy has to do it. But I thought it was alright. Talking about, obviously, crowd reactions, even in 1992, you hear the gong and everyone just, it's like a, as you say, a Pavlovian response. It's just gong and everyone erupts. You only really get that with the gong and the glass smashing for just a singular sound without it being like the start of a song. What I would give to have seen The Undertaker come in with that, with a funeral match. I've seen him live, but he came in with Roland. It's not quite the same.
No, it's definitely not quite the same. No. Just on Undertaker's music, I was watching today actually for my other podcast, which I will talk about a bit later on when we sum things up. I was watching the June 1st 2000 edition of SmackDown, and did you know that American Badass is dubbed out on the network?
The Kid Rock one?
Yes.
Oh, no.
I was waiting for it. Instead, I got that. You better run, you better pay, something like that.
Oh, you're going to pay.
The one that begins, Dead Man Walking.
Yeah, you're going to pay.
He didn't have that until 2002.
Oh,
but,
no.
But we got that instead.
At least they could do is double over with Roland.
Roland is definitely left in when relevant, yes.
They should have dubbed it over with that instead of the one that it sounds as if the Undertaker's singing himself.
Yes, it's like the theme tune to Only Fools and Horses. Everybody thinks it's Nicholas Lyndhurst actually singing it when it's John Sullivan. Another reference most of you will have.
Is it John Sullivan that sings it?
It is John Sullivan singing the intro and outro. Don't tell me you thought it was Rodders as well.
I didn't think it was Rodders, no, but I didn't know it was, I thought it was just somebody they got, and I didn't know it was John Sullivan.
Yep, he sings the tune and the intro and the tune and the outro.
There you go. Every day's a school day.
Infotainment. See, I know something. Don't let my body pressure lock scores fool you completely.
If it was body pressure only fools, then, you know.
Now that's an idea for a trivia competition.
I mean, you would be Ryan Everett on that. There'd be no stopping you.
Oh, please say I get Everett in the first round on that one.
Only fools and what?
I'd probably still follow. Anyway, this match, got the fucking number tangents on this show. We've only just got started. We've got 67 more of these to go. This match was, it was a sensible choice to close the tape with, I think. Well, you're probably going to enjoy it a bit more than the quality would suggest because of the names involved. And I guess it's Berserker and Papa Shango in 1992. As I was desperately requesting we were going to get, I would have been disappointed if I'd gone through this tape without them appearing. Undertaker and Warrior, I wonder if they teamed up on house shows rather often here as well. I want to say they probably did. This might well have been a house show main event on loops in mid-92.
Quite possibly, because this would have been, as you say, around the time that Warrior and Shango were having their literally vomit-inducing
good
feud. Were the Undertaker and Berserker, were they feuding at all, or was it just so you had a tag team?
I was actually watching a edition of Superstars from 1992 to completely contradict what I said earlier a few months ago, where Berserker was trying to stab Undertaker with his sword.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, non-euphemistic. So yes, they were.
So you've got two tangents. That you've got a voodoo warrior, no pun intended, trying to make the ultimate warrior vomit with spells and shit. And then you've got like attempted murder of somebody who's obviously already dead.
1992, I tell you, it's
a mixed bag.
This is why 92 deserves or requires reappraisal. It's why we're doing so many, I think, on this show, because the Attitude Era started here. I'm saying it. Come on. I know Peter Winton says that it really started in the autumn of 91, but no, 92. That's attempting to kill dead men with swords. Vince Russo wouldn't have thought of that.
Well, Shawn Michaels has as you know, and his feud with the Undertaker, you know, did try and kill him with a steel chair. But what he really should have done was brought in the Berserker again to finish off what he started in 1992 and tried to stab him.
Missed opportunity.
I'm telling you. If they only had the Errol Hebner like foresight and logic seamlessly going through the whole decade, then they would have done. But they can only do that once a decade, I suppose. Errol's time was just about to come.
Was it ever? We've discussed that far too often today as well. Yeah, fine little tape closer here. I enjoyed, got a kick, if you will, out of seeing Undertaker and Warrior teaming up. I wonder if there's any more matches available for us to see in which they did. I hope we come across some more. And Berserker and Papa Shango, they had to be there. It's they're the reason I do these shows there. I've explained it now. That's it. This wasn't to really go through quality and video. It wasn't to explore some of the character ones. It was to see Berserker and Papa Shango as often as I could. Please let there be on a lot more of these, and ones we will do very soon as well. I know I'm going to regret those words. So, Callum, as I said, that closes the tape very, very quickly. Barely 20 seconds after the bell, the tape comes to an end, at least on the network anyway. So are you ready to dish out a few awards?
Let's do it.
Sprinkle them like confetti. So what is our rewind of Rampage 92? The best moment, the one you would be happy to see again and again.
I think I've probably given this one away already, but I could watch Shawn Michaels, the Shawn Brett match, over and over and over again.
I am in complete agreement with you. A tick there. What is your fast forward, the worst moment or match?
I'm allowed to put the Battle Royal in.
You are?
Yes. So I just put the Battle Royal. It was filler, and it was just for the history being made in front of your eyes. But sort of questionable choices and some of the eliminations and when they happened and who was left in towards the end. Plus, you couldn't see anything for the first 60-70% of the match anyway, so I will choose the Battle Royal.
A very worthwhile choice, but as I said earlier, I hate Battle Royals anyway, and I didn't make any notes on it, and I've already forgotten most of it, so I'm going to go for LOD and Ellering versus Beverly's and Genius. A potentially half-decent idea that became a 10-minute waste of time, and my eyes still hurt for more reasons than one as a result of it. Okay, now, questionable joke number four might be coming up here. What is your pause moment of this show? The most striking visual?
The most striking visual I had was the Batman like overlays they did in the fight scene in the bar.
Okay.
I thought it took me back to my younger days when I would watch Worldwide on Channel 5 when it would come on the Friday. So when they couldn't show steel chair shots, they just put bang and whack and oof over the top. So for taking me back to my younger primary school days, then I chose that as my best visual.
I'm glad you went for that, so I can say that it is actually Sherry's arse. And so then, final award. And what are we going to give this tape? Are we going to give it a buy, i.e. a must-see? Are we going to give it a rent, i.e. a must-see over a weekend, if you can fit in the time? Are we going to give it a bargain bin, one to pick up many years into the future when it is dirt cheap? Or are we going to give this one a wipe and a void? Callum, what are we going for?
Well, the last time I put it as a bargain bin because it was one of the ones that you could have bought it for a couple of quid for the novelty that it was a show in the UK, but nothing more. It would fill a space on a shelf. This one is undoubtedly for myself a buy. It's one of these ones you see on eBay for twice the price, and I'd still buy it if I needed to. Probably because I've broken the tape for Brett versus Sean because I've watched it so much. This one wouldn't spend much time on the shelf. It would probably be in constant circulation of what I'm watching as I go. So it's a 100% nailed on buy for me.
Very generous. I'm in the middle renting for this one, I've got to say. So the second tier down. One tremendous match, which you really must go out of your way to see. But lots on here, I do think, let the side down. A lot of the stuff which I was preparing myself for in the course of this project, but even that can't really ready if you're having to live through it. A lot of dull matches here, a lot of clearly phoned in at the end of taping matches. And yes, like I say, you're going to get that on Coliseum Video. In a way, that's most of the point of doing this project. Most of the point of buying Coliseum Videos or renting them or bargain bidding them or avoiding them in the first place. But it did rankle with me just a little bit. And the LOD Ellering Bev's Genius match dragged it down still further. But one great match, a couple of really interesting combinations. Undertaker Razor, I think, was better than probably I even gave it credit for in my blurb, actually. That one's certainly got the interest factor. You've got the Battle Royal by playing the Do I Know Who This Person Is game, if nothing else. And you've got a complete rewriting of US history from Lord Alfred Hayes. All of that is enough just to keep it into the rental. But of course, with the WWE Network, you can pick and choose, and you should at least pick and choose the second match on here. Go and do that right now if you haven't already. And so then, Callum, that brings to an end Senior Video Episode 3. Thank you very much for joining me on this one and picking Rampage 92.
Oh, thank you very much for having me back. It was certainly an improvement on what we had before.
That much is undeniable, my friend.
Thanks very much. It was great running through it with you.
The floor is yours, Mr. McDougal. Tell the populace what you've got going on.
We're due to record another Special Relations in the next week or so. So you'll be getting that in the next couple of weeks for your monthly dose of niche British references, niche British tangents that we talk, with a bit of wrestling sprinkled in as well. There may be some stuff coming out regarding some missed sporting events or filling the gap thereof. I'm just trying to polish off a couple of things with that, and hopefully we'll be able to give you more information on that coming soon as well. But that's it from myself.
It's a hopefully on the next edition of Special Relations. There will at least be no further references to Matt Hancock or Chris Waddle. But no promises, everybody. No promises.
No promises, because we're coming up for the an anniversary of World in Motion coming out. So, we might replace Chris Waddle with John Barnes and Keith Allen. Just messing about. I'm looking here. I've searched the Ultimate Warrior, and there's loads of ones where the Warrior is facing Papa Shango. So there was a Superstars tape, and Ultimate Warrior pinned Papa Shango after the match. Undertaker came out for the save against Shango and the Berserker. But there's nothing that I can see of him. There's the one. There's the prime time. It was a taping where him and the Undertaker team up, but I can't see anything else. That's a missed opportunity.
Yeah, that never really went anywhere, did it?
No, it was one of these ones you could never put them. But could you imagine if it was like the Survivor Series main event, where you have a super team like they did in 92?
Yes.
Imagine if it was the Warrior and Undertaker. Oh, there he's there. Another taping. Ultimate Warrior and Undertaker defeated Papa Shango and Kamala, subbing for the Berserker. But there's only once or twice. And then it moves on to the build-up for Survivor Series. Yes. That's disappointing.
Okay.
There we go.
So, yes, you can indeed hear us on the Special Relations, which I and Callum and Ben talking all sorts of random bollocks, quite frankly. New show should be up about a week after this one drops, so look out for that. You can also hear me on the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast, wherever you get your podcast. I am now back in the fold on that one. I'm currently doing my watching, as you would have guessed from my comments earlier, for June 2000 WWF and the very disappointing King of the Ring pay-per-view. But you should, of course, listen to all the shows that the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast guys give you for WWF, WCW, and ECW. Again, wherever you get your podcasts, just search Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast and you will find them.
Just other than obviously being the godfather mark that I am, Wrestling 20 Years Ago, just when you thought you were out, they pulled you back in.
Really, the allure of... Well, Russo's Championship reign is coming up fairly soon. I wanted to make sure I'm around for that. We've got Bash at the Beach 2000 to come. Oh, wouldn't miss it for the world, I tell you.
You've jumped back in. You've got jumped back in at June, so you've got Bash at the Beach in July, but you've also got the... I take it you're obviously, by your comment earlier, you're on the WWF one this month. Yes. I feel sorry for you, because Judgment Day was good. Fully Loaded, great. King of the Ring, bang average.
Yeah, I watched it a couple of weeks ago. It's a real missed opportunity. And just a little tweak here, a little tweak there. It could have been an all-timer tournament. You have Angle beating Crash Holly in the semi-finals. Who the fuck cares? And an injured Rikishi. Well, big whoop. And I really don't like the 3-on-3 title match anyway. But for more on that, listen to me on the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast when that one drops in about a month's time. But Callum, just left to say thank you very much once more for joining me here for episode 3 of Senior Video.
Oh, thank you again.
I'm sure I will have you back on again at some point in the future.
Oh, I'm more than happy to come, more than happy to join you anytime you wish, my man.
But do join me next month with another guest as we look at another Coliseum video from the Home Video Classic section of the WWE Network. But for now, Rampage 92, I have seen your video. I'll catch you all next time.
Sensational Sherry. Apparently she provided them with some makeup tips.
Oh, Kelsey, hold on just a minute here. There There we go. Boy, have I got a surprise for you. I'm so glad you're here today. This is going to be the best thing that you have ever been involved with. I tell you what, I can't wait for that special young lady to get here. I tell you, it's going to just be so wonderful. Oh, and here she is now. A little guinea pig. I mean, model.
No.
Look at, and she's blonde. Look at this. Isn't she sweet? Look at this. And nice clothes. Hold on a second there. Here, you just, hold on, honey. You just, right here. Sit down. Right there. Boy, aren't you just as cute as you can be? And she's blonde. This definitely has to go. Here we go. We're going to make sure that your nice clothes don't get messed up at all. There we go. What are you complaining about? Are you like one of those little blondes that complain about everything? She's even got blue eyes. God, boy, are we going to have a good time with this one. Boy, has she got problems. And she's blonde. Let me see what we need to do with you here. We might try a little bit of this.
Ouch!
Well, be still for a minute, damn it.
Come on.
I'm not doing anything hard. Coliseum Video is filming this. All kinds of people are watching, so you behave, or I will make you behave. You understand me? Come, and don't be going back on drama. Come on, you're going to fall back, and you're going to say it's my fault. Everybody says everything's my fault, but it's really not. Hold on here. Sit. Come, be
what
still.
What is that stuff?
Will you come on and be still? You're such a little... little bitty thing. Come in. Oh, here we go. I told you this was going to be just wonderful. I made you the most beautiful one. Well, with the exception of me, the second most beautiful woman in the world. And are you ready to see what we have done with you today?
I think so.
Are you sure?
I think so.
Okay, here we go. You're just wonderful. Look at you. And you're not even a blonde anymore. You're gorgeous. And so,
Coliseum. You're going to make me beautiful.
Yes, I did it. I did make you beautiful. So there you have it, Coliseum Video. Not disappointed, are you? I told you that I would show you the most wonderful beauty makeover that you have ever been involved in. And here you have it. But one thing, I think it needs just a little bit more. I tell you what.
No.
There we go. Just a little bit more. Oh, isn't that wonderful? I knew that song. Just a little bit more.